apparently now it's kind of getting to a like a Beatlesque thing. Taylor Swift and Katy Perry are burying things in their songs that are like that are part of their little rhubarb against each other.
Oh, right, the Twitter feud.
Yeah, well, something about there might have been a left shark that just made a made an appearance in a in Taylor Swift video.
Oh,
like
oh,
in
really?
Reference to Katy Perry's
right.
Super Bowl
Sorry,
appearance.
I'm stuck on you using rhubarb in that context. I don't know what you mean.
It's like a sour fruit, Ryan.
I know what a rhubarb fruit. Is. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I just
as it relates to like a beef between two parties.
Yeah, no, in this case,
I just accepted it in context.
No, I mean, I got it. Like, I guess how you intended it.
Well, like, okay, so maybe a Chinese star. Maybe like...
Okay.
You know, as long as we're, it's a metaphor, star? just a metaphor for two people that may not get along, and we don't know what that fruit tastes like. So,
okay,
yeah. Anyway, yeah. So now apparently there is the possibility we talked at one point in this show about how the Today Show did a segment about a guy that could draw a perfect circle. Like this is that level news. Like.
But it's everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's everywhere.
That's what makes me crazy.
Yeah, and it's on, you know, like I have the political sites that I peruse, like, upon waking. And, yeah, like, there were, like, four or five, like, entries about the Nicki Minaj, Taylor Swift, like Taylor Swift, the media's finally fallen out of love with her. I don't give a shit. You're supposed to be a reputable fucking news organization. Like, why are we discussing this?
Well, you know they work for money, right?
It's a news cycle.
True.
Business,
yeah. But. True. But no, but what I'm saying is that, you know, most of these things that I read, like, typically just traffic in politics.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. But, yeah, shit shows up. And
maybe that's the dessert for your political meal or whatever.
Maybe so.
Political breakfast.
Yes.
Well, I think that.
Yeah, but that's like a Jello shot dessert. It's not. Fine pork.
No, and you get nothing out of it. You get nothing.
Well, I think that a lot of the uproar, a lot of, you know, with the Nicki Minaj thing that she tweeted back against, I think that came from a white privilege thing.
We never talked about that business with her. Was it Nicki Minaj that, like, licked a donut?
No. That was Who Ariana was Grande.
Oh, see, that's what it was.
Hey guys, I'm gonna go take a nap.
Okay, yeah.
I'm gonna go when you're finished.
Yeah, let's before we like spiral into a death spiral, let's play some music. I'm Shane.
Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And Mark.
Somebody likes it. Long-time listeners will remember last episode. Well, shit, you don't have to be a long-time listener. It could have been the first.
Last week. Listener.
Yeah, we did mention this, but Mark, producer Mark, was missing last week, but we didn't talk about why.
He wasn't missing in, like, a legal sense. Like,
no.
Found me.
It wasn't like a on-the-lam kind of thing. Missing from the recording of this program. Wait, I just said that like Barack Obama, missing from the recording.
From this program.
I prefer to think of him as GPS challenged.
Well, Mark,
that's the PC way to say.
Yeah.
Mark, tell us exactly what you were doing last week, because it sounds pretty interesting and exactly what, of course, everybody
would
think.
Kevin told me what it was, and it is that thing, but go ahead.
Well, and I explained it in as much as I knew, which is to say probably poorly. So you should tell everybody what you're doing.
All right. Well, the very basic part of it is that I was in Nolens last week.
Is that and you can say it like a local now because
parlance.
Well, New Orleans.
My family is from the area, so that gives me a little Pouvion. Bit of mm-hmm. yeah. Gives me a little bit of.
He's got some street cred.
But the reason I was there is my wife is a teacher and she's been running camps this summer. Teaching primarily, she's been teaching girls, young girls, to learn how to code and about robotics and things like that. So she arranged to do a camp in New Orleans, and that's where we were there. So she was teaching kids.
So I was right.
Bunch of little kids making robots.
Robots.
Cajun country.
I said Mark and his wife are in New Orleans for a robotics camp. And they were like, they both looked at me like, what's the, like a dog being shown a card trick? The old Bill Hicks line? Yeah.
So basically, your wife is going to be directly involved whenever these children grow up and build our robot overlords.
Yes. That's right. Yeah. She is prepping them for that.
Now. Well, good. That's good. All right. I've been waiting for that. Maybe we'll finally get like a real-life Terminator.
But
finally.
I finally found something that is hotter and less comfortable than this garage.
Than sitting in this garage?
Yes.
New Orleans in July.
It was buckets of sweat.
Well, and you kind of, this is a terrible joke to make, but I mean, you kind of get the impression that at least sometimes with some hurricanes, they might be going, finally, some rain. Like,
oh, it rained.
Yeah.
It rained. It's just that the rain seems to hit the ground and then just kind of come up and hover about 10 feet.
Yeah.
It just sits there.
Uh-huh.
At times we were definitely wading through.
Well, I think that city is technically below sea level.
It is, yeah.
It is.
Fun town, quite humid.
Yeah.
But it was enjoyable. Had a great time. I spent most of the time doing kind of the Mr. Mom bit with my youngest son. But I'm also glad to be back. And, you know.
Did you take him to Bourbon Street? Because I'm pretty sure they don't have a drinking
I
age.
Actually did take him down Bourbon Street, yeah.
All right.
I just took him over to Pato's. And
I
like
drove him down
hurricane.
Bourbon Street, and I said, this is where all the girls get their boobies out. And he kind of looked at me and said,
you know, this is true. The worst, and I, fortunately or unfortunately, I've not been to strip clubs particularly often compared to people who frequent them. But I have been to a couple in my younger days in New Orleans, and by far, the worst strip club scene I have ever seen in my life happened in New Orleans, where the short version is, girl comes out, does the dance, puts a robe on, and then goes around and solicits tips. Like, if there's not enough money in it, this could all happen again.
Is that like kicking ass and taking names?
Kind of. Yeah. She didn't ask for anybody's names. She just asked for money.
that's kind of the give and take of... That's the currency of the currency strip, of the strip club.
It's literally currency, yeah. As it turns out.
All right. What, Kevin?
Kevin, you picked this week's record.
Yeah, so I wanted to pick something light and bouncy. And to that end, no, actually.
You failed.
Yeah, several weeks ago, maybe it was a couple months ago, when this record came out, producer Mark mentioned to me, he was like, you got to pick the new Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds record. He's like, he had an opinion on it right away. I won't share that straight away until we can dive into this.
That is the way to say it when discussing Noel Gallagher, straight away, not right away.
Like, oh, sure. Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. I'm channeling my erstwhile Brit. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So I'm familiar with the record that he put out in 2011. I actually enjoy it. Looks like it kind of got a mixed bag. I'd never dug up the reviews on it until I started looking into this thing. It kind of got a little bit of a mixed bag. We'll talk about all that stuff. But yeah, today we're going to be talking about Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, Chasing Yesterday, which... I don't know if there could be a more perfect album title.
Apt title.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That is pretty on the nose.
Yeah. So anyway, this has never been a man who has been accused of being coy with his influences.
Subtle. Or forward-looking with his songwriting.
Yeah.
Not a lot of subtlety.
So anyway, but I do think that there will be lots of fun stuff to unpack here. I know that... I was actually, to be honest, I was a little reluctant to dive into this record because I was pleasantly surprised by the last one in certain respects, and I thought, there's no way, I kind of felt like there's a lot of ego at play here, and I don't know if this guy's just sort of running out the string on some sort of, album requirement for the label, but it's Sour Mash, and I guess that's his imprint.
Yeah,
I think he finished up his creation deal with Oasis and then bailed.
Yeah.
And now it has, enough pull that he just puts out his
own. Well, he has enough fucking money to put out whatever he wants on his own vanity label.
To that end, I will note that he actually has come up with a figure that it would take to reunite Oasis, like a monetary figure. So
that's kind of refreshing. The Smiths don't do that.
Yeah, no, of course they don't. You guys want to guess?
For them to reunite, like for a show or for a record?
Well, I assume to go on tour. But like, for them to reunite,
to go on tour,
this would be the monetary amount that it would take.
Dollars,
to get
euros,
pounds.
It was more than $15.
Assume dollars, but euros would be close one way or the other. So
I don't know, $100 million.
Okay, Shane.
Yeah, probably for a tour.
Yeah, let's assume.
Yeah,
a tour.
Like 75-80 million.
Okay, Marco.
God, see, knowing how much he would just despise doing that.
Yeah,
I would think that it's got to be at least $500 million.
$500 million.
Wow, Mark wins the prize.
Yeah, he was like,
"Come on down."
And so the guy asked, like the interviewer asked, he was like, "How much would it take to like just because people are going to ask, like how much would it take?" And he was like, "For $500 million, I would say let me go find the other guys and tell us where we need to be."
We probably should talk about this record.
Yeah. So.
This just came out in March, actually, of 2015.
Yes.
So just a few months ago.
I was somewhat reluctant to unpack this record because there were a few things on the last one that I thought really showed promise, and some other things that I also enjoyed, and I find that expectations with regard to this guy's career are either too high or too low. It's like,
I think that kind of comes depending on what side of the pond you're on too. We'll talk about that in a minute. But okay. Ryan, what do you think about?
I miss Liam.
Miss him at all.
It sounds to me, Liam's got that sneer, that kind of like snotty attitude that comes through.
And I think that works on. I mean,
this sounds to me like an Oasis record without Oasis singer.
I didn't get it at all.
It didn't sound like Oasis to me at all.
It did to me, but
there are parts where it definitely
the first song
sounds like Wonderwall.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same strum, right? But I mean, once you get past that, like I was rolling my eyes. I mean, I love this album. I think it's one of the best things I've heard all year.
I think it's a really good record that I'm not going to be able to enjoy as much because I've heard
this particular
artist do better things.
I mean, this is the best thing that I've heard them, that I've heard, like, collection of songs. I didn't hear the first High Flying Birds
album,
but I mean, this is like the best collection of songs, in my opinion, that he's put out since What's the Story, Morning Glory, that I've heard. There's a few high points in those last couple of Oasis records, but I mean, for the most part, like, those, you know, there's not, like, I think I heard something about, like, what was it, Standing on the Shoulders of Giants? Like, somebody read me a quote one time, and Noel Gallagher said that, or the producer said that that album went, I think it was the producer said that album went down the drain with an 8-ball of coke. There's a lot of hubris involved during that period of time. Mm. And it just seems like, because, I mean, face it, like the motherfucker can still write melodies and choruses.
No, I think it's a genuinely
good
record.
There's not a bad song on this record.
The only other beef I have with it is that I have to compare it to Oasis because I know their early stuff pretty well, and it's the same songwriter. The production's a little cleaner than I would like.
Well, that's one of the big things about this record was that this is the first one that he actually produced himself. So there is
it kind of mutes the effect.
I thought that it sounds there's a lot of compression going on. I definitely thought that at first, but the more that did you listen to it with headphones?
No, I listened to it in the car and on my computer and a little bit on my phone.
Well, when I listened
one and a half times.
The first time I listened to it, I didn't listen to it on headphones, and I thought the same thing. But when I put headphones in and listened to it, it all made sense. Like, it sounds great that way. So I would recommend if anybody goes and listens to this album, like, listen to it once through on headphones. There's a lot of subtle stuff that comes through, it doesn't sound as compressed.
I suspect if I had to only listen to this for 2 weeks, I had no other options of things to listen to, I'd probably really like it.
I would agree that sonically, I think it really comes across great. But I think you kind of nailed it with your comment about rolling your eyes. Like, I think that the lyrical content on this, to me, it's like he just had a giant wheel that he spun with cliches on it, and it was just, he just strung these nonsensical things together that
that's just, been his entire
it,
career.
It has, and well, I want to talk about this in a few minutes. If you could, Ryan, guess, I love this album. It's not reinventing the wheel.
I've never cared about like Oasis's lyrics.
Right, but
like,
I'm just saying, I just want to establish that before I say, like, I really, really enjoyed listening to this, and I will definitely listen to it many more times. But if you could, knowing me, what would you think that the two things on this, let's say,
if you're going to ask me about lyrical content,
well,
I didn't download any of that onto my own personal.
No. I mean, there's one. We've already talked about it. There's one other thing, and that I fucking hate, and it's on multiple songs on this album, and that is that there's fucking saxophone in the middle of the song.
Oh yeah.
It's so.
Does it make you feel like it's out of an 80s cop drama? Like,
kind of, yeah. Like, there's a guy, like, wailing on the sax wearing, like, like Blues Brothers shades. Like, he's sweating. He's standing on a balcony in New York, and it's the summer, and he's in silhouette, you know, like, with the saxophone up in the air.
It makes him deep, Shane.
I guess.
Well,
it makes it something.
I do think that it's kind of interesting that, you know, I mean, one of the things that gets bandied about with regard to this record is the fact that there is a little bit of a different musical approach than he's taken in the past. There's some Mellotron that makes an appearance that is not typically part of his wheelhouse. And so it's the impression that I got and the impression of some of the other people who have written about this for major publications seems to be that he's trying, like, it's a little bit a mellower version of him, but it's also potentially more expansive. I don't know.
I just think the choruses are great. I mean, I think the songs are great. I guess I'm just not the kind of person that compares, you know, like, I don't even like comparing albums by the same band, you know, typically, like, if I like one more than the other, I think that, like, I just like to go in personally and just let the songs live or die.
I wish I could do that.
Yeah, I mean, you've always been that way, but I mean, I'm more that way.
And I can't.
Well, and I will say that I think choruses have always been his strong suit. Like, they're always that.
Boy.
Seriously, that guy makes.
He can write a melody. He can write a chorus for sure.
Yeah. Those choruses. I mean, again, there's not a bad song on this record. I mean, I think the worst song on the record actually is the last one, the one that fucking Johnny Marr plays on. Like, personally, that's what I think. Yeah. I'm just saying. Like, other than that, even that one is okay. Like, I really like the record personally. But you know what we should do is listen to a song.
Yeah, let's because it's a little bit of a pastiche of some of his references, and I think frankly, like, a good example of how he some people would say borrow, some people would say incorporate, some people might say something else.
Pays homage
to folks that influence him. Let's start with Riverman. Snippet from the Rolling Stone review of this record. One of the things that they mentioned about that song in particular, Riverman, is that it's almost a game of spot the reference or spot the precedent. They say a Nick Drake like title, lyric drops of George Harrison, which is actually like it starts with the lines from something, and then there are little snippets of Dylan in there as well.
Wasn't Wonderwall a George Harrison reference?
Yes, that is. So, you're correct.
Yeah.
Well, Jesus Christ. I mean, come on. Like I literally thought that I was washing dishes and I had my back turned to the computer. And I literally thought for the first like 4 or 5 seconds, I was like, oh shit, I accidentally put it on fucking What's the Story, Morning Glory. And then the rest of the music comes in. And you're like, oh, this isn't Wonderwall. And then it becomes a pretty good, in my opinion, it becomes a pretty damn good song. It's a crazy good chorus. And then for no fucking reason, there's saxophone all over it.
I know. Yeah.
Well, what is the point?
That's your bugaboo.
It's your kryptonite. Like somebody came over and peed in Shane's bed.
Yeah. Oh, this isn't the only damn song on the record with
his
fucking
cats.
Saxophone.
That could have happened.
Well, we're joined by Mark's wife, Janet.
Hi.
Lovely to see you. It's been a little while.
Yeah.
Janet has a story to share.
Well, and let's give Janet the minute. We told Janet we would take better care of her than this. So essentially. So Janet actually, part of the reason that Janet has been fortunate enough to avoid this show for a little while, and tonight we wanted to make sure that we brought her in because she actually had a run-in with Oasis, like kind of at the height of their ascent, right? Like as these guys, 20 years ago, as these guys were just blowing up.
Yeah, unfortunately it was 22 years ago.
Yes, if you can't tell... Janet
from
is
Northern Ireland.
Janet's originally from
I'm
Belfast.
From Belfast, yes.
Yeah, and so you were in. Were you in Dallas at the time when you
ran
into the guys?
I was at the University of North Texas in Denton, and I met a girl there who was from Warrington, in England, and Stone Roses were from there, and she was a huge fan, and she found out about this band called Oasis, and. I really hadn't heard much about them in my time in the UK. So anyway, she introduced me to them and found out they were playing in Deep Ellum in Dallas. And
was this around like their first record, Definitely Maybe?
Yes.
Or, yeah, okay.
Right at the start.
We went and saw them.
We did. We'll talk about that later. We'll get back to that.
So we all... Well, not we all. She rented a car, and we drove to Dallas, and we went to see them, and Deep Blue Something were opening.
Oh, badass.
I said, what about breakfast?
Yeah.
You get the feeling if those guys got together now.
You're still
on it. Like,
here's the one song that we had that made us some money, and then Oasis would go like, well, here are all of the songs that we had that gave us some money. And then they just hit them at each other.
I got to imagine the Gallagher brothers hated that band.
they pretty much did. So we're there, and the Stone Roses guy, roadie guy, was like, you know, sucking up to my hot Warrington friend. And we got invited backstage. But
what happened then?
I don't know.
What happened backstage?
It's all a blur.
I know your husband's here, but
I know.
Go
just
on.
Wanted to say my husband is here.
Yeah. Well, so, you don't have to give us the. You don't have to get super specific, but generally speaking, you met the band
in PG terms.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was.
Now we're PG.
Really excited. So anyway, I'm pretty ballsy. We got into the Gallagher brothers. Shit, they fight with each other, and
they're legendarily known for that.
Yeah, and that's not not an untruth, it's the truth.
This part of the story I didn't know until tonight.
That the Gallagher brothers fight?
No, I knew that the Gallagher that obviously that part that I knew. this particular part of this night I did not know. That's not a part
well,
that Mark
she
ever
did,
shared.
She did say earlier that things started flying around.
So anyway, we're in this room, and there's a bunch of hot guys walking around, and some hot girls, including me. So
you don't mind saying so yourself.
So anyway, we're like sitting on a couch, as you do,
as one does backstage. Yeah,
there's beer and stuff, and so we just like chat. And next minute, I knew I'm like, oh, Liam, hey.
And he said something unintelligible.
you can't understand a word that motherfucker says, man.
I didn't even know. I didn't care. You think I care what he said?
It's true.
Come on.
That's true.
Liam
That's
Gallagher.
True.
At
He's
the
like
time.
The Brad Pitt character in any Guy Ritchie film.
Yeah. Right. I don't think for the listeners we actually pointed out the fact that you had an interchange with Liam Gallagher. Not just him sitting next to you. You actually.
I know, I snogged him.
You
yeah.
snogged, yeah.
Yeah, that's the British term for
yeah.
it.
That's just making it British making out, right?
Shaking
well,
hands.
And,
so some of the things that were flying around the room were tongues. And one of them ended up in your mouth.
And the bottom line is that...
you're such a fucking romantic.
Mark is smiling broadly right now.
I don't even know what that means.
But I do also have to, like, move forward. So that happens in Dallas and the whole Stone Roses connection, who I absolutely love that band, too. I don't know if you do also, but they have... Ian Brown is, like, also someone that was there that night. And he was? Mm-hmm.
Interesting. That's pretty cool. I'm a huge Stone Roses fan.
Yeah, they're great.
And that's how the whole connection was made. Because Warrington, so my friend Karen is from Warrington. And so the whole reason why the connection was made to go backstage was because of the Stone Roses.
Right.
And because Ian Brown was there, and the roadie who had gone through all of the stuff with the Stone Roses was there, and that's how my friend Karen got us backstage. So that's not a point that...
Were any of the In Spiral Carpets there? Because I understand that they...
That's the other roadie connection, because Noel Gallagher roadied for them.
Yeah, that was it. That's his whole thing. And I just can't imagine, like, what a curmudgeon of a roadie he would have been. Like,
oh, yeah.
Don't you know? Like,
you want me to do what?
Yeah.
That's great, by the way. Why don't you do more accents? Like, that was spot. It's just, you have a hidden genius for it.
Yes. Well,
thanks.
Hidden
and genius.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, very hidden.
I don't practice, and it only comes out every now and then, and it's never on purpose.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't show that you don't practice. I'll just...
Well, Janet, thanks for joining us. This is really fun, and provides us an insight into, certainly into Mark.
Hey, Janet, we're going to be doing a Stone Roses record actually next week, if you want to come back in and tell us a Stone Roses story.
All right,
kids. Let's all right, back
thanks, Janet.
Thank you, Janet.
That's my beautiful wife, Janet.
Thank you. That was really cool. And
lovely woman, and great of her to feel so free with you that she could share
her
premarital exploits with
you know, I'm proud of her all around.
Yeah. So, no, she's great. And it made me think about one of the things that, this is a tiny segue. Pitchfork, who I often... savage a little bit because they get religion on records and then come back around to them. They needled this record pretty good, and not everything that the reviewer said is something that I agree with. But one thing that he brought up I think is like sort of worth sharing, just in terms of kind of throw the question out to the room. He said he essentially feels that Gallagher's lyrics are pretty guarded, like. Beyond simplistic, like just he just doesn't take very many chances. Whereas if you hear him interviewed, he takes every chance. He doesn't give a shit. Like so anyway.
True.
So I'll read you what he said. He said, "Reading a conversation with Noel Gallagher is one of life's great pleasures. He's quick-witted, unguarded, cheerily self-effacing. Pretty much everything that the overly mannered music he's making these days is not. His second foray with the High Flying Birds ventures further afield than his 2011 debut, but still succumbs to the same issues, most notably a palpable joylessness and the extra strain that puts on Gallagher's modest voice and piecemeal lyrics." So he, like, lyrically, he doesn't get into him the same way, but do you agree?
Like, well, I think for me, number one, saying, like, you know, it's... what did you say? Like overly guarded music, or I mean,
well, and
it's just different.
He just sort of said
overly
the same thing. I
overly
said.
Mannered. Yes. He's pining just like you are for Oasis. I mean, this is different music.
He just said the same thing that I said at the start of the show, like just in a different way. Like there was a certain amount of bombast to Oasis that I really enjoyed, and
it's not Oasis.
I know it's not Oasis. I mean, and I need to get over myself.
I want to talk just for a second about Noel Gallagher's lyrics, because you ask, like, do I feel the same way?
Slowly walking down the hall faster than a cannonball.
That's one right there. That's one of the greatest nonsense lyrics. It makes absolutely no...
Zero sense.
Zero sense. Oh, here. Well, hold on. Before we get there, I read something today, and the person, the reviewer, said that his lyrics often just seem like a way to get to the next note.
Sure.
Which is what they're a total afterthought.
No, they're like scratch lyrics. that he just kept in the song.
That's what it is. I mean, that's exactly, that's what it's got to be. It's like he's singing syllables, he gets the song done, and then he's in the studio, and at the last second he's like,
oh, shit,
I got to write some lyrics. I can relate to that.
Well, and that's what I was saying. It's like he pulls out the pocket edition of the rhyming dictionary and just starts thumbing through it.
Okay. Yeah, let's just talk real quick about some classic. You just brought up one. Another classic Noel Gallagher lyric from that same album is, and of course, the first three words are a reference to a Beatles song, but and Morning Glory, when he goes like, "Tomorrow never knows what it doesn't know too soon."
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, it's just, but at least least that's a little bit clever, or it's just weird. There's there's so many on this record that are horrible, but the most egregious of a shit. And I left my list. I was writing them down, listening to it. But the worst line on the whole album, and maybe one of the worst lines in any album ever, is, "She shot me to the sun like a bullet from a gun."
The girl with the X-ray eyes.
That's true.
That song is the worst.
But the music
offender.
Is so good.
I actually like that song.
Yeah, that's what.
But I just tune the lyrical part of my brain out when I'm listening to anything that this dude is involved with. Like, I just don't do it.
I mean, he's got to be aware of how stupid his goddamn lyrics are.
Beyond that, like, it's lyrically, it's almost word for word, but not entirely. Like, it's a meme and a theme that shows up over and over again in his stuff. Like, the sun and the gun and the, like, and, like, frankly, like, he's such a compelling hook writer that it's like you find yourself caught up in it. It doesn't matter what the fuck.
But it's cliche. But
it is cliche.
But I want to touch on that just for a second. I mean, like, it is nearly impossible for me to get past really bad lyrics. It will take.
I know this about you.
It'll take.
How many shows have we done?
Yeah, I know. But I mean, but there's something about his melodies are so goddamn good.
He writes great.
I can
hooks.
Totally get past it. Like, it doesn't.
Does
like
he, does
you know,
it, know what a champagne supernova in the sky is?
No, I. Yeah. Okay. In the champagne supernova, he does have one of my favorite lyrics, and that is like when he's just asking the question like, "Where were you when we were getting high?" Hey, where were you? We were just getting high. Like, where were you?
I do think that we ought to play a little bit of "Ballad of the Mighty Eye," which is the Johnny Marr.
I did like that song. I just didn't like it as much as the rest of the.
The
music's cool.
I will say this before we dive into the middle segment. I watched the video, and the video is like kind of gives me a different take on. I didn't fall in love with that song, but and we'll talk about it on the back end. But I do think that we ought to watch the video, and then after we chat about it for a minute, we'll go to the middle segment.
Okay, good idea. Because I'd like to see maybe they'll show, like, could anybody figure out exactly where Johnny Marr was used in this song? Because
right, well, yeah.
Well, Johnny Marr doesn't like to play like Johnny Marr anymore.
Yeah, I know, but still, like, it's all that guitar is buried so far underneath. It's just, I don't know.
Well, let's listen to it.
Okay.
All right. Yes. Here we go. Actually, just watch the video as a way to listen to that track, and a few things that I thought were particularly interesting. If you get a chance to go see or to pull up the video for that song, then please do.
What was that song called?
It's the Ballad of Mighty Eye, and that's the one that Johnny Marr sits in on. And so you guys were kind of trying to figure out where the
Johnny Marr
guitar parts were. But the thing that what struck me about the video was that it is a tiny bit self-deprecating, and it's kind of funny.
It's like the beginning and the end.
The beginning and the end are funny.
And the director of the video, he's like, "Oh, that was a great take, Liam."
Yeah.
No,
it's Noel.
But they start out where he's outside of, he's making a video and then like he's immersed in it. And
well, what's up
things
with him
are happening
like
around
finding
him,
like a guitar next to a dead guy or
so
something?
So he picks up a sure. dead guy's guitar well, yeah, the and narrative, does a little bit of a music interlude.
He steals a jean jacket from a thrift store.
Well, he gives away a jacket and then he steals another one. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know
he's
if that's
quite serious the whole video. He's very
it's
serious.
It's very
man.
Rock star
he's
in
very,
that way.
He's very. But I like, you know, that song does a cool thing where it does it modulates keys in the verse. Again, like, I think what irritates me about it is the way that he sings, you know, the word "you" over and over again in the chorus. It's just not. I mean, I'm used to him having really strong choruses, and that chorus just does not do it for me. Anyway,
yeah, just it was quirky, and it sort of altered a little bit of my perception of
the
song. So I wanted to share.
And
that
I
with
can't
you.
Remember the line, and maybe during our intermission, I'll find this line. But he said like he used his rhyming dictionary thing, but but this time it actually kind of made sense. He's like something like, I was sinking in the sand, I gave you my hand, or something like that. Yeah. But it was like a dumb line, but for once it wasn't like
that's
a nonsense
actually,
dumb
no,
line.
That's a metaphor. That,
yeah, I know. That's what I was saying. I was
it's
actually
like
impressed.
I was sinking in the sand, I gave you my aunt.
Something like, yeah, I mean, it was. Yeah.
My ham.
Your ham.
My ham.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Anyway. Well, Ryan, you got the.
I do have a few minutes with, and we're going to spend a few minutes with Alda Nova.
Okay, we'll be back in a minute with some discussion on Alda Nova.
So yeah, coming up here very soon, for your listening pleasure, is...
I like how you said, like... Pleasure. For your listening
your
pleasure.
Listening pleasure. You may pleasure yourself while listening to it if you like.
Yeah, okay.
But it's...
sure, it's the kind of music for that.
Yeah, Alda Nova's Fantasy, which I think all four of us here in the room know, but for some no good reason, I looked up again recently on YouTube, and it's an entertaining video.
Yeah, I've definitely never seen the video.
To see it.
I was actually going to open. If I had opened, I would have just said, "You're welcome."
Holy,
I knew that was coming.
Holy shit. That was amazing.
That was pretty entertaining.
And I will say, what I remember about this record, or this record, this song.
Yeah, have you ever heard another Alda Nova
song? No,
of
course not. Yeah, what I remember about this song is that all that, like, helicopter and then, like the industrial, like, screeching sounds in the beginning are on the actual track. Like, so
they just synced it up in the video?
They just synced it up. Like, the actual, like, kicking of the door or, like, whatever. Some of that, like, video shit, like, wasn't in there. But I was like, that was sort of, like, when that song came out. Of course, now you, like, see it with adult eyes and you're like, okay, it's pretty stupid. But at the time, I was like, oh,
it
was
marketed
ominous.
To, like, 12-year-olds.
I was like, well, we were closer to that age then.
That's true.
So, anyway.
Yeah,
but hilarious.
In the beginning, there's like that noise is going on, and there are two dudes with Uzis. And then
yeah, they need guns for some reason. They're outside like a warehouse.
Well, and then there's a third guy that has a guitar, and then he's holding it, and he's not wearing it on a guitar strap. No, he's holding it,
clutching it.
He's clutching it, and then a helicopter lands, and the dudes with the guitars, and then the guy the dudes with the guns, and the guy with the guitar like walks like Igor, schlepping the guitar, and then this dude appears from the helicopter
Aldenova
wearing a solid leopard print silk suit.
As one does in a battle situation.
Of course.
It's kind of like the same material as like a kimono, except that there's like it's cut into like
or a couch or a
Or
it's a two piece. It's
Chase
a
lounge.
It's a jumper.
Right. And then they go to the doors of this warehouse and they try to bang. They can't get into the doors.
They can't get in for whatever reason. So, and the guys with the guns can't do it. So what happens?
Aldenova grabs the guitar from Igor and then shoots a laser beam at the door.
Through the guitar. Yeah.
And then they go, and that stuff never comes back on. Like, we don't ever know.
None of that is referenced. It's referenced whatsoever.
Again. And then there's just a run-of-the-mill concert video in which he licks his fingers and touches the guitar strings and humps the guitar multiple times.
Well, within said warehouse, apparently, was a ready and willing audience waiting for him to get in, which he couldn't get into.
Yeah. Why didn't they just open the door when the guy was banging on the door?
Yeah, they're all trapped in a warehouse. For a show that the guy who was headlining couldn't get into.
Yeah, they ostensibly had paid money.
You know what?
And gone in through an entrance, but the guy they were paying money to see couldn't get in.
Which is actually kind of refreshing. Maybe we should fuck the artists a little bit more. Those guys, make them work for it.
Yeah. So you don't see that ever. No, the artists never get fucked.
Yeah, artists getting fucked over? No.
So he goes and plays the song, and then he starts like glitching in and out and as the audience tries to approach him. And then as the song ends, he's like collapsed on the floor in a darkened room and it's spinning in a circle and occasionally shows different shots of him prone on the floor and good stuff.
And it flashes repeatedly in neon.
Aldenova.
Who was this guy?
Aldenova. Oh, yeah. So you brought that to at least my attention that I always thought that it was the band was named Aldenova.
No. It's a dude. He's a Canadian guy, and his real name is something very Italian that somebody in the business said, you can't.
Here's the other thing, you guys. Like, it's a fantasy. It's a fantasy life.
That's true.
So maybe it's just his mind. Yeah.
Someone needs to make a documentary where they go back and interview guys that were like the kings of video directors in the 80s, and like we could see all these old videos. And like, I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm not the man for this, but if somebody's
listening, that out there.
I'm just putting that out in the world.
I just want to point this out to Shane real quick, and I know I'm kind of doing this on the fly, but start with in 1990.
In 1990, Aldo Nova wrote the main guitar riff that would be used in the John Bon Jovi song "Blaze of Glory."
Yeah, so he's got that going for him. The other
residuals.
Yes. So you know he's not a one hit nothing. And to that end, so I mentioned it.
Is that a thing? A one hit nothing? Is that the phrase?
It's one hit wonder.
Yes, but a one hit nothing is pretty good.
Anyhow, no, I know that I mentioned. To you guys in the wider audience that I had a brief run-in with the law where I had to spend a little time in the Hooskow. There was a guy when I had to spend that brief period in jail, which was a couple weeks, who had an Aldenova tattoo on his back. And this is
was it just the name Aldenova?
It just said Aldenova, like spelled out like a, you know, like a logo. And I was like, dude,
like
did you like
logo?
Get that when you were drunk and like immediately regret it the next day? And he goes, I swear to God, he goes, no, man, Nova rules. I actually genuinely like this song. I mean, it's stupid as hell, and the lyrics are retarded.
No, you and I are on the same page. It's a guilty adolescent pleasure.
Both need to go trade your cars in for cherry red 1982
Camaros.
Corvettes or Camaros.
Yeah.
Yes, because of one shitty song that we like.
Oh, yeah. No, this comes up on a regular basis. There have been other ones.
We grew up in the same place, and in the burbs, you were issued like certain things that, like, I go back and I listen to Journey now, and like there are certain Journey songs that I think are genuinely good songs.
What? Why? What is wrong with you?
Yeah, why are we going there?
That's a rabbit hole conversation for another week, but. Suffice it to say that
you ever want
ultimately, we all arrived here. So there's something to be said.
To me, no Gallagher's high
to me,
birds.
Well, that and well, to me, and we'll move on from this. But to me, it's the piano part that like kind of creates a little bit of tension in this, and maybe I'm just a sucker for that because it goes back to the LCD sound system conversation back in the day,
which I wasn't a part
the
of.
Tinkling, so the tinkling stuff. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, before we get out of this, I just want to say one thing, and I just want to just allude back to Journey for a second. I shouldn't tell you this, but if you ever like want to get revenge on me for John Bon Jovi or subsequent things,
I'm so gonna pick a Journey record.
Oh no, that's happening.
Journey record.
Yeah,
yeah, that will happen.
Yeah. We'll see, but I'm fine with that shit because you guys know I have to listen to that stuff anyway. Yeah. So, yeah. All right. So anyway, all right. That was Aldo Nova, the dude. And so now we're gonna go back in and talk about Noel Gallagher, the dude.
True or false, guys? One of the things that they note in this Pitchfork piece that I referenced earlier about Noel Gallagher, it says that itemizing the song quotes in a Noel Gallagher song is a bit like counting all the F-bombs in a Tarantino flick, a futile exercise in duh. Like, there are going to be a lot of them. Do we agree that that's true?
I'll agree. We'll go ahead and say true on that one.
Yeah.
Well, I've always thought that.
I think that there are more F-bombs, though.
Than bad lyrics?
Well, no, more F-bombs than references. References are harder to do than F-bombs.
What we haven't brought up is, Shane, you've met this gentleman, haven't you?
I have, well, briefly.
Shane was in a band called Kling.
And yes, in Austin,
back in the day.
Back in the day. And we opened, they did an 8-date tour. Well, this will exactly set when it was. They did an 8-day tour, and the Austin date was the last night of the tour, and it was within the week that Wonderwall hit number one in the United States, and they were technically the biggest band in the world.
And they were still playing smaller venues, though.
They were playing, Ryan,
that was
you
part
and
of
I,
their U.S. strategy.
You
though,
called
right?
me. I was in Indiana at the time.
No, but the year before,
we had seen them at Liberty Lunch.
We saw them at Liberty Lunch, which was a smaller venue, but we paid $6 to go see them.
Was that how much we paid?
$6.
It was me and Brandon, wasn't it?
I think it was Brandon, yeah.
We have one friend who's a dedicated Oasis
fan. Oh, yeah, he'll definitely be listening to the show, and he's going to castigate you about not loving this record. Not really, he won't castigate you.
No, but he's one of those people who's going to love everything that Noel Gallagher does.
That is true.
And, I'm not saying he's wrong.
Right. It's not like, you know, it's not like you hated the record. I mean,
but how many people were at that show at Liberty Lunch? Like maybe 150, maybe?
No, it was more than that. I mean,
definitely or maybe.
Oh, Jesus, Kevin.
It was on that tour. It was on the definitely maybe tour. Yeah.
I mean, it was half full.
Yeah, it was not a full house.
No,
and Liam did pull the whole, pick a girl out from the crowd thing and have his henchmen pull her backstage.
Was that my wife?
It might have been, man.
It was on the same tour.
Henchman. Yeah.
But so, yeah, you, so Kling.
So yeah. That
on the next tour.
We opened for them, which was a really interesting, I mean, there's a lot of, I could,
I bet they
day.
Liked you better than Deep Blue Something.
I know they did.
I've heard both, and yeah, that would be correct.
That was a true thing. So Liam's walking around during sound check and stuff, bumming cigarettes from people, and he's wearing
Facts.
A shirt. What? Yes.
Fags.
Yes.
He's got like the number one record in the world.
In the yes,
and like
literally
bumming fags
and
off.
And he's bumming cigarettes from people, and he's got salt crystals underneath his armpits. He's been in the and he smelled like ass. He's been in the same shirt for days. And so after the show, like he's crouched. Oh, and he crouches down a lot. It's kind of like, it's hard to explain, but
sort of seems like an onstage thing too. Like, right?
Yeah, he crouches all the time. And so he was off to the side of the stage, crouching down and watching our whole set. And he's like, man, it was fucking great. And
fucking.
And then, so they invited us backstage and I hung out. He actually was great. I had so much fun with him. He's like, you know, come on. I'm not going to try to do another Mancunian accent. He's like, come over here. Would you like a beer?
Didn't
super
you
nice.
Tell me you understood about every third word?
Yeah,
or
I couldn't understand a fucking word he was saying. So later in that night, it was the last night of tour, and they decide, and so like there was lots of cocaine involved. None of my bandmates knew there was. I accidentally walked in on the cocaine room. Basically, that's how I knew that that was going on.
And I am shocked that that shit went down.
I know. So they ended up trekking in extra beer so everybody could stay there and didn't have to go to a party somewhere else. And we were all upstairs, and this venue has like an overlook balcony. And I'm hanging out with the rest of the band. We're just having it's just really fun. And the guy, most of the band were really like blue collar guys, just salt of the earth, like just having a good time. You know, and I'm fucking like 21 years old, like having the time of my life. And I see Noel sitting off by himself in a chair facing the stage, I mean, with a bodyguard right there. And so you have to go downstairs to pee. And I go downstairs to pee, and I come back up, and I was like, hey, I'm Shane, open up. He's like, hey. And I'm like, hey, I really like that you played Castle in the Shadow. I love that song. And he looks straight ahead at the stage and goes, yeah, it's a good fucking song, isn't it?
Isn't it?
And that was it. That was that was our whole. But it was just like, yeah. Oh no, he said, yeah, it's a great fucking song, isn't it? And then like turned away, and then that was my cue to leave. But you know, like and he was just like, there was lots of sniffing
like,
and rubbing
like
of the nostrils.
Prince of Oasis, I guess. Yeah, like you don't look at him in the eye.
Well, but that's why it's so funny that I was saying I read that AV Club article. He's really downshifted. You got to understand, like, I mean, what crazy adulation that band got in the UK and, you know, to this day. It's got to fuck with your head, number one. But also, as you get older, you're like, oh, this isn't going to go away, you know? Let's go, let's listen to one. You want to hear one more song?
So what has been bandied about is the most Oasis-sounding song on this record, which I think is kind of a hilarious thing to say about a Noel Gallagher record, is the song The Right Stuff. Let's give that a whirl, and then we'll talk a little bit on the other side.
One thing I wanted to mention about about this album is the song titles, because they sound like they belong on a metal album. Some of them do. The Dying of the Light, The Right Stuff.
Oh my God, it's Dio.
Where the Song Remains the Same, Lock All the Doors, Do the Damage. You know what I'm saying? It's just.
Does that mean that Noel Gallagher is secretly like 4'3"?
Possibly so. Yeah. Oh, and then here's The Mexican. Oh, that's just Anyway,
that one's got cowbell in it, and we did not pick that tonight.
You know what? That's probably my least favorite song on this album.
Yeah, I didn't love it either.
Honestly.
But I did think that I was like, oh, Freaky well, teeth. There's some fucking cowbell.
That like, that song that we just listened to, The Right Stuff, I think that's...
Wasn't that a New Kids on the Block cover?
It was
not. It is, actually. That's why it sounded familiar to me.
Yeah.
It sounded like the Stone Roses to me, but that just goes...
No, it does sound like Stone Roses.
It just goes a long way in introducing Noel Gallagher's genius.
I think we can agree that like the guy seems reasonably comfortable in his own skin.
He's reasonably comfortable in putting fucking superfluous sax all over this fucking record.
What I will say about to Shane's point, when the sax bubbled up in the middle of that song, Shane was like, it's the sex.
Well, no, I think you texted me at like 4 in the morning, like a week and a half ago, going like, ugh, sex and what is that NXS song? That
No, it wasn't 4 in the morning. It was like 8 o'clock.
It might have been. I wasn't able to access
Ryan doesn't make any distinction between
that's true. Yeah, I was on my way to meet somebody, and the song was on the radio, and I was like, oh,
Never
God,
Tear Us Apart.
Never Tear Us Apart. There's that.
And I was just like, all right, dude.
So.
Meanwhile, that was like Kevin and his high school girlfriend's song.
What? It's a good song, and then it dies with the goddamn sex.
Wow. And we see where that got us.
Yeah.
Hey,
listening to like NXS on the cassette in the Audi.
So I just want to
see. Yeah, there you go.
I just want to tell you guys real quick before we get out of this, while we're talking about the sax. Next week, I have the intermission, and I wanted to do it tonight because I thought I had a few minutes with, but there is one song that I've heard, and it's very recent, that I'm cool with the sax solo in it, and it's not a jazz song. It's like I won't say it's a rock song, but
wait, is that what we're gonna listen to?
We're going to listen next week to a song that has a saxophone in it.
That you don't hate.
That not just don't hate, that I think is amazing.
Are you a Charlie Parker fan?
Yeah, but jazz is different than rock and roll, dude. I mean, I fucking have said this like 100 times to you.
We don't
like,
have the 7 hours it's going to take for you guys to talk about jazz together.
I love Charlie Parker. Well, I
only need 7 seconds. I think that shit bores the shit out of me.
I know.
Yeah, I know. You hate it. I love it. But, I mean, again. Yeah.
I'm with Shane on this one.
Pick a Journey fan. I'll come back with a... Goddamn, anyway,
we're
Barker
so going to listen to Journey.
Finish your thought. Anything else?
Oh, no, that was it. So, okay. So, next up, Current Affair, and we're going to listen to a song by Kate Tempest.
Current Affair.
Meets Peaches.
That's what I sent to you. I didn't see the Peaches part.
Oh, no. You sent me a nonsensical text.
No, but that's because your phone took out everything. I'm so glad it did.
All the verbs.
So I specifically picked, well, you can read it in a minute. Just let me say, it took out, it can. His phone, I sent him a late night text about this.
I thought you were just drunk.
No, it took a bunch of old texts and then compressed out everything I wrote about her, and then put some other text in there, and the only thing I actually really sent in there was from Nee Barnett.
Depressing Nee.
No, but I didn't. That was about somebody else. Anyway, so the reason that I wanted to put her on tonight is because we've been talking. She's British, and we've been talking all night about how
bad
Noel Gallagher's lyrics are, yeah. And this. Her lyrics are not bad.
No, they're good. I mean, I've only heard this song once, and I want to hear more.
Yeah.
She's a poet. I mean, she...
Well, she is a poet. Yeah, she literally came up through the slam, through poetry slams.
Right.
There's something about that song. The first time I heard it, I just heard the third verse, and I was like, God damn, this is... Because I had heard her before. I heard some live stuff, and I didn't really like it, but in that context, I did. And then... The more I listen to it, because it's got kind of almost an electroclash thing going on with the keyboards.
A little bit, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it just gets in your head like an earworm, that chorus that's not really a chorus, but it is.
That's what I've always said. If the lyrics are really good or really bad, I'll notice them. And these seem to be really good, and I've only heard this song once.
And that's why I wanted to pick this song tonight, because...
This is great. This is a snippet from the NPR take on her South By performance. This guy says, of all the artists I saw at South By Southwest this year, Tempest was one I'll never forget. The London hip-hop artist, playwright, and poet speaks with a clarity and honesty unencumbered by code or lingo, with stories that cut to the very heart of how we try to survive and embrace our time on Earth, which sounds cliche. But anyway, he says, she jumps straight into the line with a spoken word story of a soldier that looks at both the bravery and horror of conflict. Essentially, where this guy nets out on his review of her South by Southwest performance was that he took her work back to NPR and they all started crying. Like, that was essentially the gist of it.
It's intense, like, man.
That's a big deal.
I was like, either the people at NPR are the most sensitive people on Earth, or they're jaded, and this is, you know, just kind of hits you where you are.
Like, well, there's some lines in that song that, I mean, that's like give you chills kind of stuff. Like, you know, like, what is the one, like, do you want a job in retail? Oh, you have a degree? Like, just little, like, snippets that are just like
it is a little
like there, Austin, there Austin is circa some, 1991 but
there is sounds some, like Austin it sounds like anywhere circa now
there is some Courtney Barnett in there
there is
like,
Courtney Barnett
for sure
like, yeah it is not as funny as Courtney Barnett but it's interesting like yep. Courtney Barnett is
well there, and the accent the South London
the accent kind of makes it humorous
and it you know it immediately drew me to look up Lily Allen.
I was going to say the streets.
You know, she's from the same area, essentially. You know, that South London kind of neighborhood.
We should cover a streets record one of these days, but we don't want to get bogged down in doing only English records, although
next weekend.
But we've been talking about doing this for as long as we've been doing this podcast, and somebody sent us a request. What is this gentleman's name? Nicholas Collier. Suggested we cover the Stone Roses' second record.
Second Coming.
Second Coming, which is the most pompous fucking name for a record.
Which is, I've got as a Stone Roses
but
fan.
But the few songs I've heard from it, which are maybe three, I really like.
I did. I remember the single, but I didn't listen to the album. I mean,
Love
I'm sure I've heard it.
I think, was the single.
There's something that's so pompous about it. And
well, yeah, it's right there in the title.
Yeah.
By the way, one last thing on Kate Tempest. Her South By set, that this whole like sort of glowing, effusive review that was written on, three songs. Like, the whole thing was three songs long. Two of them were remixes. So,
wow.
Like, anyway, at the very
she's
least.
She's good.
Yeah, she's good. But that sounds great. Yeah, we should totally do the
Stone Roses' Second Coming next week. I'm looking forward to it. Our friend who traveled very far away to go see them when they reformed. This is actually his preferred Stone Roses record.
It sounds better.
Is he going to sit?
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we'll ask him.
Okay.
We'll see if Chad can come in, and if he can't, then no problem. But anyway, fellas, I think we have reached the end.
Our only friend?
Yes, my only friend.
Good
the
God.
End.
We should listen to it. Doors.
No,
let's
not.
We'll get really deep.
I'm thinking of Doors.
See, now,
Father, I want to kill you.
Mother.
I want to.
Yeah. All right. We're gonna.
I think that's all the Doors we ever need to do right there.
Yeah.
All right. This week I'm Kevin.
I'm this week still Ryan.
this week and next week probably I'll still be Shane.
And I'm Mark.
Somebody likes it.